The end of the article isn't the end of the story. The Journal podcast goes behind the scenes with reporters and covers everything from the Mormon Church's $100 billion fund to coronavirus. Listen to The Journal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, July 21st. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. School districts are getting ready for the back-to-school season. And this year, because of the pandemic, the prep includes more than just lesson plans and classroom setups. Since many schools will be conducting their classes online, teachers will also be handing out computer equipment and going through technology trainings. But the big question is, can tech really be a stand-in for in-person learning? Our family and tech columnist Julie Jargon will join us to explain after these headlines. The Chinese tech and financial services giant Ant Group says it's planning to IPO in Shanghai and Hong Kong. If this is the first time you're hearing about Ant, it was founded by the billionaire Jack Ma, and it's best known for its mobile payments network, Alipay. Here's our financial editor, Charles Farrell.
It's one of the largest private fintech companies in the world. It is essentially the way that hundreds and hundreds of millions of people in China pay for everything. So it has an absolutely enormous presence in China, and it has become one of the two kind of de facto methods of payment. So it's on tons of people's mobile phones. It's accepted at all kinds of stores. It has sprung out over a relatively short period of time to be a major, major, major force in e-commerce.
A person familiar with the matter says the company is aiming for a market valuation of more than $200 billion in the IPO. Charles says that makes the company's decision to list in China instead of, say, New York, a significant one.
There has been this tension for a while inside these companies and inside the Chinese financial sector about should the big, big tech unicorns of China be listing in the U.S. or listing in China. And China has been working assiduously for years to try to establish deep enough and liquid enough capital markets to be able to do that. And the reason that you go to New York, the reason that you go to London, the reason that you go overseas has always been you can access money there. That's where a lot of the money is. And so if indeed this IPO goes off, this would be up there on the list of biggest IPOs ever and would be a demonstration for China that there's enough access to capital for them to do it locally.
And speaking of China, we report that Beijing is concerned that more European countries will be banning Huawei from their 5G networks and that it's considering retaliatory measures in case that happens. People familiar with the matter say Beijing could target Nokia and Ericsson, two of Europe's biggest telecom companies. Measures they're considering could include preventing the companies from exporting products made in their Chinese facilities. The news comes as the U.S. has been leading a global campaign to drop Huawei over concerns that China could use their tech for espionage. Huawei and China, for their part, deny those concerns. And IBM says its revenue fell by more than 5% in the second quarter. Analysts say large companies have been skittish about making big tech purchases amid the economic uncertainty of the pandemic, and that could be affecting IBM's bottom line. Even still, IBM's cloud computing business was a bright spot, bringing in $6.3 billion in revenue. That's up 30% from a year before. Up next, schools are getting ready for the fall, and they're hoping to learn from the mistakes they made in the spring, including being better about how they incorporate technology. We'll talk about that after the break.
When the world is at a standstill, facts can move us forward. Facts help us make decisions and bring us together even as we're apart. The Wall Street Journal has the facts in these uncertain times. Get the latest on the coronavirus outbreak with free coverage of the crisis and its impact on the economy, politics, culture, and daily life. Find the clarity you need with America's most trusted news source. Visit WSJ.com and stay informed.
As we get closer to the fall, teachers and school administrators are getting ready for a back-to-school season like no other. And with the pandemic still raging, many will opt to include at least some online learning. We know from the spring that remote instruction didn't go so well the first time around, but with more time to prepare, schools are trying to avoid repeating their mistakes. Our family and tech columnist Julie Jargon has been looking into this, and she joins me now to explain. Julie, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Julie, remind us what happened in the spring. What were some of the critical issues that we saw when schools had to shift to remote work?
I think the first thing that schools focused on immediately was making sure families had the technology at home to be able to even do remote school. It was something, obviously, school districts had rarely ever dealt with, at least not in this this scale. So the focus back then was making sure families had laptops and wireless internet connections. And the focus wasn't so much on the quality of the curriculum or the ability of parents to actually do all of this. It was a scramble to loan out laptops, loan out Wi-Fi hotspots. Now school districts are saying that things are going to be different this fall.
How so? What are some of the ways they're planning to do that?
Now that they've had a little bit more time to prepare for the possibility of going fully remote, they have done a number of things to try to make this go more seamlessly for families. A lot of them have determined that this time around, teachers will provide more online direct instruction to students. The other thing that happened last spring, because teachers didn't have much time to prepare or get trained in some of the different online platforms like Zoom, Google Classrooms, it really was a scramble. And in a lot of cases, you know, it was left to the parents to largely educate their children. Teachers in many districts were not offering much in the way of online instruction. Maybe they would have an hour Zoom meeting with classes here and there, and then they would post assignments for students to complete at their own pace. Now districts are saying that the teachers have been better trained. They've decided on what tech platforms work best, and there will be more rigorous online instruction from the teachers. Meaning less instruction that the parents have to do.
And some schools are even turning to outside specialists too, right?
Right. Some districts have decided to partner with third-party education tech companies to provide the actual instruction and curriculum for students that are doing school remotely. One school district in the San Francisco Bay Area has partnered with a company like that that licenses out its recorded videos of teachers providing instruction and assignments. And the intention there is for students to be able to complete their schoolwork at their own pace and not be tied to the schedule of a regular school day. And the idea is to give those families who opt to do that more flexibility so that if they have parents who are working outside of the home, they can structure their school day around the hours of the parents rather than making sure that those students are checking in during the hours that the teachers are providing online instruction.
Now, that's an example of a really innovative solution, but is there a tech solution for all of the problems that we've talked about?
Technology can only go so far to address the issues. I mean, even if every single family gets a loaner laptop and has an internet connection, the burden still does fall largely on someone, a caregiver at home, to be in charge of their students, to make sure they're on track and doing the schoolwork that they need to be doing and turning it in when they're supposed to be. And that's a challenge even in the best of times. It's even more of a challenge right now when a lot of families are either dealing with ill family members or job losses or changes in their jobs. For essential workers, people who have to work outside the home and can't be at home during the school day to supervise and help their children. And even parents who are working from home and have that ability, they have to pay attention to their jobs. And it's, you know, it's hard to stay on top of what the kids are doing in the other room. And I spoke with someone from an educational learning service that works with school districts and provides digital curricula and instruction to school districts. And she said the best kind of model of remote education relies on teachers in large part. Like technology can provide some of the basics, you know, when it comes to doing math drills, that kind of thing. You can have video instruction that will help with those kind of skills. But when it comes to the bigger, more nuanced skills like critical thinking, that really relies largely on teachers to lead that kind of instruction. And there's also the social and emotional aspect of learning and relationship building between teacher and student that gets lost when everything is done online.
And budgets between different school districts, between cities and states aren't the same. So I'd imagine that has an impact too, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I think what we saw last spring was, you know, some of school districts in wealthier areas had more devices to begin with and were able to more quickly solve the issue with regard to the tech gap. You know, school districts that have more money have more laptops to loan out. Districts that don't have as much have a harder time getting materials out to students. Same thing with, you know, in terms of rural areas, if there's just no Wi-Fi or internet connectivity at people's homes, that's a harder problem for a school district to solve.
Julie, why is this such a big deal? What does it actually mean for the kids in some of the circumstances that we've mentioned?
Well, they could fall behind even more than they already have. We know from last spring, a lot of students didn't sign in online at all or kind of dropped off because it was so hard for their families to, you know, ensure that they could, quote unquote, go to school every day. So there was a lot of learning lost. Then you have the summertime slide that happens when kids lose a certain portion of their reading and math skills over the summer. So students will be starting the fall behind in some of their critical skills. You know, if they're unable to do their schoolwork remotely for all of the reasons we mentioned in the fall, it's going to set some kids, probably the most vulnerable kids, behind even more.
Yeah, and it's not random who those groups are, right?
Yeah, this has been particularly hard on lower income kids, children with special needs, children with, you know, who speak a different language other than English as their first language, and very young kids. You know, it's hard for kindergartners and first graders and second graders to do schoolwork online, especially when they're starting to just build their literacy skills. It's really hard to set them in front of a computer and have them sort of be self-starters. They really need supervision. And of course, for all kids of all ages, the lack of socializing with their peers, being in person to get assistance on their schoolwork from their teachers and building those relationships with teachers and that trust, when that's not present, that sets kids back on a social level as well.
All right. Our columnist, Julie Jargon, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And that was your tech news briefing. We've got more tech stories on WSJ.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.